Today's the final meeting of this this seminar, and in a way there's a lot to cover, so I'm just going to get right into it. I think we got up as far as, if you look at the chronology, GBC emergency meeting or extraordinary general meeting of 1985 that happened in New Vrindavan. And there was also an Istogosti of Prabhupada disciples at that time. I happen to have a copy of minutes of that meeting, which they don't survive in the GBC records, but I did get a copy of both the minutes of the Prabhupada disciples and also the GBC minutes when that happened. Found these things in my files. I'll just give you some of the main events that took place at that time. Let me write notes up here. I have to do this with all these different... what happened at this emergency meeting, the very first GBC resolution, there's two separate meetings really, happening simultaneously. At the Istogosti, a significant thing was it was a very big room, and everybody for the first time, it was all Prabhupada disciples, that was the idea, it was Prabhupada disciples. And for the first time, everybody sat on the same level. The GBC or the gurus didn't sit on higher seats than everybody else. Kirtanananda was there, but he was boycotting the meeting. He said the reason was that the previous meeting, the GBC had not completely endorsed him. There was a devotee there named Sulochan, whose wife had been initiated by Kirtananda without his permission. This is a whole long soap opera, which I can't describe now. But Sulochan became very, very discontent about this, about his wife being initiated without his permission, and actually filed a complaint with the GBC. And in the August meeting, the GBC had said something to Kirtananda that he should not have done this. So then he, as protest, he wasn't going to come to this meeting. But the first item on the GBC meeting is Sulochan was excommunicated from ISKCON. That's because what actually happened was Sulochan, who was just a guy with a grievance against Kirtananda, went to the West Coast, met up with this Kailas Chandra, whose name has appeared with Jadarani and other places, met up with Kailas Chandra, who told him, hey, it's not just Kirtananda, it's all the gurus. According to Kailas Chandra, he wrote a bunch of papers with Sulochan expose of everybody, which Sulochan was handing out to the police, to the press, to everybody, called the ISKCON game and stuff like that. Sulochan wrote me a letter. And he said in his letter, I still have the letter, he said, oh, your reform movement is very nice, but it won't do the job. Only violence will work. Now, usually when we talk about violence, we talk about yelling at each other or something, but he actually meant it because he then went on, he said, you're like Gandhi, but I'm like Subhas Chandra Bose. Do you understand the reference? Well, Prabhupada had told the story that there was the nonviolent, peaceful Satyagraha movement of Gandhi. But on the other hand, there was another nationalist movement led by Subhas Chandra Bose, who was a general and who organized armies against the English when it was a threat of violence. And Prabhupada said that it was the threat of Bose that actually made the British give up. So that's what... Sulochan was actually... thought he was a Kshatriya and wasn't told by people he was a Kshatriya and that his job was to use violence. That's and of course later on he was murdered because during the course of the next year, at one point, he was actually murdered, which started a whole other thing. But anyway, he was excommunicated. The GBC changed. They accepted some proposals from this Istogosti of temple presidents. Now, when I got together with our leaders, what do we really want about the gurus? People were all over the place. I mean, first of all, in this Istogosti, everybody got and spoke up and for several days. There was, to my mind, there was clearly some people who wanted to use the opportunity to get rid of gurus as far as possible. Really, that's what they would have liked. Somebody was proposing monitor gurus, which is actually what later became the proto-Ritvik system. So there was in this protest movement one group of people, you could call them they were quite radical, but who were not satisfied with the outcome of this whole thing. And then later they emerged as the Ritviks, and they're still with us today. For my side, and I think most of the leaders, we thought that the guru-disciple relationship itself was a Shastric requirement, which we had to preserve and keep intact somehow or other in a bigger structure in ISKCON, but that the Dzogchenzonyi way was the wrong way to do this. So our main effort was to bring down this Dzogchenzonyi system. On the other hand, our main principle was in this regard to establish the authority of the GBC, because de facto, if not de jure, the zonal acharyas were in charge of the movement and the GBC was subordinate. That's the way it worked. And we wanted to reestablish the authority of the GBC. That meant that in the course of doing that, we could not defy the GBC, because we would immediately contradict our own purposes. So the GBC came to this emergency meeting, and we went to them. Ultimately, we had two proposals. One proposal was greatly expand the number of existing gurus. In my mind, one of the problems was there was a property requirement implicit to be an initiating guru. You had to have your own exclusive initiating zone, what they called your Prabhu Datta Desh. Although what Prabhu gave it to them, I don't know. But anyway, it was your Prabhu Datta Desh. And if it limited the number of people who could be gurus, so very few people were taking larger and larger numbers of disciples, which we felt was dangerous. And our vision was of temples where you could have one temple in which the disciples of many different gurus could work together harmoniously and cooperatively, because they would have an allegiance that wasn't just directed to their spiritual master, but to ISKCON or that person who personifies ISKCON, Srila Prabhupada. That was the idea. That was the only way we could see having everybody work together. So you had to have this get rid of the property requirement. So that was the idea, at least in my mind, for liberalizing the restriction. Right now, the GBC at this point said you had to have two-thirds or three-fourths of a vote of the GBC in order to be an initiating guru. It was still very restrictive, and people were not being allowed to initiate simply because nobody wanted to give them a piece of his, none of the other acharyas wanted to get rid of a piece of his zone for somebody else. So the GBC passed that resolution that at that time they said if you get three GBC members approve, you can start to initiate. Any Prabhupada disciple could do that. They agreed to that on the first day. The second thing was what to do about the other things, the worship and the things like that, the asasanas, pictures. And on this, in the reform movement, people were all over the map. There was just no kind of agreement about whether there should be Guru Puja or not Guru Puja, here or there, when or where, seats, no seats, big seats, little seats. It was all very confusing. add I think the contribution that I'm proudest of was to suddenly understand that this exclusive vyasasana, this idea of having two vyasasanas and there being one that only the local acharya can sit in, that was the symbol of the zonal acharya system. I mean, where did they come from? Who said that? Why couldn't there just be one vyasasana that all the gurus could sit in? Why were these two? And in that way, implicitly, the zonal acharya was symbolized in this kind of ritual way. Well, as a student of religion, I knew that if you destroy the symbol, you destroy the reality. And so our proposal was that we came into the GBC, just one proposal about this is get rid of the exclusive vyasasana. And just to show that this was the right thing is there was big trouble with that proposal. I mean, some people got very, very upset. The same people were saying, there isn't any zonal acharya system, show us in the resolutions where there's such a thing. But when we said, okay, let's get rid of this exclusive vyasasana, all of a sudden, you realize a lot was at stake. And they eventually, they came up with the resolution. There shall be only one vyasasana other than Srila Prabhupada's in each temple, and there shall be no guest vyasasana. That was, they agreed to it there. And but then an interesting thing that happened is, as I said, Kirtanananda stayed away from these meetings. And he didn't like them. There were some papers by his people being distributed. They didn't attend. So finally, Kirtanananda wanted to address the Istagosti, where everybody's sitting on the same level. So the people who are in charge, I guess Balavanta was the GBC chairman, he agreed that he could come. So all of a sudden, all these Kirtananda people come in the room, and they bring in a chair for Kirtananda to sit in, right? So immediately, there's the language of furniture, you know, he's on the higher chair, and then he addresses us. He sits down and somebody in the background says, Bhakti Bhad Ki Jai, and Kirtananda says, be quiet, you can't say that in here, you know, and this is, that's how it started. So he was, this meeting. Then people went home. Oh, and that's when I started initiating. I became an initiating guru, by the way. Our little group of people, we got together and said, gee, the GBC says three signatures. We got to have some people. So they looked at me, and this is the first time I really thought about this. So I got three signatures. As they wanted, in fact, Satsarup, Tamal Krishna Goswami, and Ridayananda Maharaj as the signatures. So I was then an officially approved initiating guru, at least. Well, then what happened? Then most temples, you know, they only one vyasasana. I think, when this resolutions hit Krishna Balaram Mandir. I hear there was quite a scene where there was a whole group of Prabhupada disciples who felt quite pent up for some time, who went and tore out, you know, because on either side of Prabhupada, they had built in to the side of Prabhupada's vyasasana these two vyasasanas, and they tore them out, disassembled them. It was like the Bastille Day or something. And there, underneath these vyasasanas that had been put in there, were the plaques that announced Srila Prabhupada's name as the founder of Charya Viscon on one side in English and the other side in Bengali, you know. Right. Just see, you know. It was like, that was a big event in India. So then what happened is, as I mentioned, and also, Bhavananda had been, suspended as an initiating guru. He was put on suspension That was another thing. I can't find it here right now, but it was here somewhere. Oh, it says here the GBC received his resignation, but they decided not to accept it, and they put him on indefinite probation. That was indefinite probation, not sent to the Asasana, not initiate, so on like that. That's what the GBC did, even though he submitted his resignation. Then when we get to the next big event, was at Mayapur in the next annual meeting of the GBC, and this is where there was an attempt by Bhagavan to have a counter revolution. He spent his time working on this, but it was cosmetic. The counter-revolution was cosmetic. I guess I wasn't there in the GBC meetings. I came to Mayapur, which is the first time I had come for almost 10 years. I came to the Mayapur's meetings, and there was all kinds of things being done to heavy people out, you know, the Bhagavatam classes and all that other kind of stuff were in support of the Zonal Acharya system and everything like that. And then in the minutes of those 87 resolutions, 86 resolutions, I'm sorry, we're talking about 86. I'm sorry if I confused you by getting numbers mixed up. In the minutes of those 86 resolutions, you can get an idea of what happened. Scroll down and find it. There were certain reform proposals that they accepted, that they finally accepted that a simple majority of the GBC will be required to change ISKCON laws. As I mentioned before it was almost two-thirds, so that a small group of people could stop anything from happening. So that was the first resolution, but the next, they said, the GBC bodies considers the meeting held at New Vrindavan in September 1985 was not properly called and held according to existing rules and procedures. So they said the meeting was bogus, it was unbona fide, it was horrible, shouldn't have happened, and so on like that. But then they turned around and said that they would accept the things that were done at that meeting as proposals for the GBC body. And then basically, on the matter of who could be initiating gurus, they decided to tighten it up, that this three-signature thing was too loose, which, by the way, everybody had agreed with by then, because one of the persons that got three signatures was somebody from Germany named Maharam. And we all wondered, what three GBCs? Anyway, so we agreed it was too loose. So then the GBC said a majority of the voting members, unless the majority objects, person can be considered a candidate for initiating guru, then after 1 year, he'll be automatically approved. That's how they tightened it up. And that was not bad, you know, as far as we were concerned. But then they decided that those people who had started from September 85, they would give their blessings to. And then they list these people, Lokanath Swami, Bhakti Abhay Charan Swami, Maharam, Veer Krishna, Veera Bahu, Paramananda, and Gitanagari, Charudas, Narahari Swami, Radhakrishna Swami, Mahanidhi Swami, Ramapada Swami, Niranjana Swami, Navayogendra, Rupanuga, myself, and finally Vipramukya. Those were the people that were like named at that time, who had already started from September. But then the controversial, then the other thing that they did was that all of Bhavananda Goswami's GBC initiation responsibilities can be resumed by him as of October. They had a secret vote, and by one vote, this was agreed to by the GBCs. And that did it for the GBC. That really did it for the GBC. They were lobbied very, very heavily by the by the Australian temple presidents. Australia, ISKCON Australia, was a cash cow of monumental proportion. You know the expression, cash cow? Kamadoop, to turn that cow that you milk money out of. It was a cash cow, and a great deal of money was coming by their Sankirtan, in quotes. And the temple presidents, and they were really behind Bhavananda, and they came in very heavy. If people thought American temple presidents were heavy, you should have seen the Australians. So Bhavananda was reinstated as of October, and he had been made by Bhagavan as kind of the symbol of laissez majesté. I mean, he was everybody had to. So they also said, as far as what you do with the Vyasasanas, that would be a local option, according to the zone. So they kind of loosened it up a little bit, but most places what was done by done was done already. I was very upset with this. I had to see, like, you have to understand that on the reform side, on the GBC, before we had the first New Vrindavan meeting, 13 points to improve ISKCON, 13 steps, had come out from Dallas, and it listed all these different reform provisions voted on by the leaders in Dallas, which was Tamal Krishna's place, and everybody understood it had his blessings. And so he was definitely, at this point, he was on the reform side, and suddenly looked to me like he changed sides, you know. So he and I had it out in private. But he pointed out to me, and he's quite right. He said, "Don't worry." He said, "These things that Bhagavan is trying to do, they're cosmetic." But Tamal Krishna was the GBC chairman for this. He was elected chairman for this year. So he did what he did for whatever reasons. I'm not quite sure. But he was right. The sort of counter resolution was cosmetic. The other thing he did, by the way, is the second level meeting, the temple president's meeting, he caused to be called the manager's meeting. Now, the temple presidents were that was the seat of the reform. So he called it was the manager's meeting. And he came with people from his whole zone. They flooded into this Mayapur meeting. And all of a sudden, there was the minister of this and the minister of that, the minister of cooks, the minister, and he suddenly had 40 people who were suddenly managers. And so he came in and packed the manager's meeting, got packed with his people. And Bahudak, who was the chairman, the leader of the revolution, and also the chairman of the manager's meeting, suddenly got outvoted all the time. And Bahudak was really upset. He was really upset. That's when he just finally dropped out. But he had said to me, he told me when we started this, shortly after we started this reform thing, he said to me, "You know, I'm just like these guys." Because he had a revolution back at home. And it turns out he was very tyrannical, sort of a temple president. And also he wasn't straight and narrow very much with the regular principles either. So he was vulnerable in the same way that everybody else was, and that he was attacking. One lesson that I learned, you know, that if you have to gauge in the activities of finding fault or criticizing other Vaishnavas, and you yourself are not trying to become pure, it's going to blow up in your face. It really will. You know, sometimes you have to do that. You have to criticize somebody, but that can't be in any way as a substitute for your own self-criticism. And he dropped out after this thing happened, even though the consequences of that were nil. The next year was an interesting year, 86. It was a very interesting year, in the course of which basically the GBC backed away from the sort of counter revolution that took place. First of all, they found Satsarupa Maharaj came to our temple and tried to defend the Bhavananda resolution, and I was there in the meeting, and I felt so sorry for him. I mean, it was very heavy. The GBC had also passed a resolution that every GBC member is obliged to defend and support the decisions of the whole GBC body, whatever their personal thing was. So it was very hard with that Bhavananda thing. Was just didn't make it at all. Then what happened in the following year was, I want you to notice this, that Rameshwara, Bhagavan, Bhavananda were all gone, and Kirtananda too. And you should notice that all this happened before the next GBC meeting. In other words, the so-called reform group didn't do a thing to remove any guru. They all were self-removed, so to speak. I don't exactly remember the sequence. I knew things were going to change in July of that year when I heard that a group of Australian temple presidents had been caught smoking marijuana. And then I could understand what was happening. Because a lot of times, I've seen this, when you have a leader who's compromised, he also has a service of followers who are compromised, and they basically protect each other's sense gratification. And I could see that was what was going on in Australia at that time. So I knew there was going to be a problem there. Then Rameshwara, and a classic, I mean, just there was a, he was two women from the Los Angeles temple, one his disciple, ran across him in the Santa Monica Mall with a young girl. He was dressed in carmi clothes, and for the first time, people noticed he had been lifting weights, and had now, was buffing himself up, as they say. And he had this young girl with him. They were out shopping and everything like that. And just the shock to see a sannyasi and a guru out enjoying himself in the company with this Gurukuli graduate. I think she was 16. Was a real shock. And there was a conversation which then these two ladies went and typed up according to memory and sent out all over ISKCON. And then there was a big uproar in Los Angeles with action on the streets sometime. And then what happened was then somewhere along the line, Bhagavan sent out a letter resigning as a GBC and a guru that he had formed an attachment to a particular woman. He resigned. In San Diego in August, there was a North American meeting of the North American GBC. Well, before, in August. And they wanted to, they issued certain restrictions. They reversed this idea of Bhavananda beginning initiating again. And they gave some guidelines for him to follow, that he read Prabhupada's books at least 1 hour daily, chant 16 rounds in association with other devotees, stop criticizing others, stop ethnic slurs of all kinds, stop reading mundane literature, watching television, going to movies, own and wear only a minimum amount of Western clothes, shave head regularly, carry danda, wear a Brahmin thread, and so on, neck beads. So they looked into how was Bhavananda reforming himself, and they decided reduce toiletries, do not travel in first class, anyway, do not travel with Baladas. I get they had a servant of whom they were suspicious about his relationship. I don't know if there was anything going on, but at least they were suspicious. So that's what happened with that one. They just dropped their backing of him at that point because he was obviously seemed to be in an enjoying mood. They dealt with Kirtananda. Dogs will not be allowed inside any ISKCON temple. He had a dog. I don't want to get into the whole Kirtananda thing, but meanwhile, what had happened with Kirtananda is this devotee, Sulochan, had been murdered by a guy from New Vrindavan who was told to do so by Kirtananda. who had also killed somebody else earlier, as it turns out, also a kitten on his request. This was Sulochin, who was passing out these papers. Once he was murdered, people began to take him seriously, especially the civil authorities. And they began an investigation of New Vrindavan. As they investigated, they noticed what their Sankirtan was like. They called in the FBI because that crossed state lines. The FBI came and raided the place. And suddenly, there was a federal case against Kirtanananda. And a grand jury, that's the American system, a grand jury convened to see whether he should be indicted with crimes. That's what happened that year. And the GBC had asked Kirtanananda to, you know, go on a leave of absence until his name is cleared. And he refused to do that. Plus, he was getting very strange. He had his own movement going by that time. He was opening temples, publishing his own books, completely separate and not under the control of anybody else. And you see these things in this. Also making sannyasis according to his own things. Then also in this meeting, you see Rameshwar Swami has requested the GBC body to give him a leave of absence from his GBC and guru functions until the Mayapur meeting. Well, what was behind that is there was an investigation, and somebody finally found his bill from American Express where he was going out and charging money for things, and you could see there was a whole sort of a nightlife happening. That so that's what happened with Rameshwar. So he... So these things happened in that year, and then after this, or shortly after this, this didn't happen by that day, but then this letter suddenly came from Bhagavan resigning. So they were getting very nervous about Kirtanananda. Almost every ISKCON devotee believed that Tirtha wouldn't have killed Sulochan unless he was ordered to do so. In fact, I had a bunch of New Vrindavans come to our temple, you know, shocked that we were shocked. And I said, it was authorized. It was authorized. It's too much, you know. So then there was a North American Temple Presence meeting in Chicago, when we also formed a Prabhupada Disciples Association to bring in more Prabhupada disciples. And at that meeting, I was in because Baldock had dropped out. I was then the chairman of that association. And at that meeting in Chicago, we said that the GBC has to go through some kind of reconstitution, that they had just lost faith in them, and somehow or other, like Brahma casting off his body of Maya, they had to somehow or other reconstitute themselves. I'll read you some of the things here. They mention a radical loss of faith in the GBC body is caused by the perception that the GBC has not accepted the fact that it has made a grievous error in the way the position of the Guru was established in ISKCON after Prabhupada's departure. On the part of the body as a whole, there's been no collective realization of error, there's been no regret, there's been no rectification. Indeed, the GBC took steps toward reform with great reluctance, and only after several of the big acharyas had established had fallen down, and then only under extreme pressure of a reform movement led by senior devotees outside the GBC. Reform was begun in the New Vrindavan meeting at September 85, and yet at the following Mayapur meeting, a reactionary spirit prevailed in the GBC. And now the leader of that reaction, in whom the GBC body put its faith, has also fallen. At the same time, the GBC has not had the will to police its own members, especially its established acharyas. It has acted only when forced to do so by public scandal or severe pressure by non-GBC devotees. In short, the GBC body has not been able to give this movement proper spiritual guidance. For a long time, it has allowed its members to use their position to protect sense gratification, and therefore it has not been able to execute the will of Srila Prabhupada. Anyway, it goes on in that vein. It was a pretty heavy document, yeah.
I love it.
I'm just to ask, and I'm just curious, from what I heard, there were many people leaving this context of being disillusioned. And I was interested in this disillusionment for with the goal of the ISKCON, or were the people who were losing faith in Prabhupada and taking his instruction?
I don't think anyone had any loss of faith in Prabhupada. It was either in the gurus or in ISKCON. You know, I don't think it was any loss of faith of Prabhupada. Anyway, let me just... So what happened as a result of this meeting is that then in Dallas in December, there was a meeting of the North American GBC, and Uttamal Krishna was the chairman. And there he used his position as chairman to set up the mechanisms for this 50-man committee. I was there at that meeting, although I wasn't a member of the GBC. I was invited to come as a representative of our, you know, radical group. And so Tamal Krishna, over the objection of, strong objection of some of the GBC present, he set up a mechanism by which a committee of 50 could be formed. There was also some concern expressed in the minutes about Kirtananda Swami. He's getting further and further out. It was getting pretty scary, actually, because of New Vrindavan, many Indians in North America viewed that place as a place of pilgrimage, and he was in contact. He had to live on a mailing list, huge mailing list of Indians. He sent out a mailing list to them saying that there was a government plot against Hinduism, and because he was the most prominent Hindu, therefore, that was how the government was attacking Hinduism, and they wanted to get all the Indians in North America to rally to his support. And we could suddenly see that by doing that, he was going to try to force ISKCON to defend him, whereas most people had a great deal of misgivings at this place. I mean, it was getting very scary. Plus, he had booked himself got an agent and was going around to television talk shows on a First Amendment freedom tour. And so he was appearing in every media center in North America, telling people that he was the leader of the Hare Krishna movement in North America and that there was this government plot against him and that this was an example of religious persecution. But I think almost everybody in ISKCON believed he was really guilty. I mean, everybody else in North America had tough dealings with New Vrindavan for years. And so this was getting increasingly dangerous. So then what happened is, then there was another meeting that the North American Temple presidents had, in the beginning of the next year before the GBC meeting. And Kirtananda said that he was going to send 150 Prabhupada disciples. His idea was that in New Vrindavan he had more Prabhupada disciples than anybody else. He was going to come to our meeting and outvote us. By this time I'd personally received death threats and things like that, from his people, so it was getting very serious. What we did, even though his people came and his leaders came, the North American Temple presidents voted in a resolution asking the GBC to expel him from ISKCON. That's what we asked, that he should not only be, you know, suspended from the GBC or removed as a guru, but out of the movement altogether. It was just too dangerous for our movement. And so that was a very heavy meeting, as you can imagine, with all their leaders there. But that was the resolution that we passed. So now we're getting up to the GBC meeting of 87, where, and you look at the resolutions. Well, the first thing that happened when we got together is we dealt with the proposal involving Kirtananda Swami. By then there had just come out in America in Rolling Stone magazine an article called, what was it called? Something about Dial Om for Murder. There's a famous murder mystery, Dial M for Murder, by Agatha Christie. So this is called Dial Om for Murder. And it was the story of Sulochan and all these things like that, and Nuvrindavan and Kirtanananda, written by some reporters. And later on, it became expanded into this book, Monkey on a Stick. And that had just come out. And so the first thing the GBC did, I wasn't on the GBC yet. The first part was another, some very heavy sessions, but pass a resolution expelling Kirtanananda from ISKCON. Some people were very much against it at that time. But then you see in the resolutions, Ramaswar is removed, Bhagavan's resignation is accepted, Bhavananda is removed as a GBC and also as a guru. Then there were other people who dropped out of the GBC also at that time, who weren't. So this is what happened in 87. And then the GBC authorized a committee. This is the committee of 50. I mean, all Tomo Krishna had the authority to do was have a mechanism to find 50 senior Prabhupada disciples who would come to Mayapur and do some kind of review of the GBC members individually. So he didn't have the power to actually appoint such a committee, but they all came. So there was 50 people there, and so the pressure was on the GBC to do something. And so the GBC voted that this committee would interview the GBC men and others with relevant information, discuss, and then express in a simple majority vote of confidence or no confidence in the 17 existing GBC members. So the GBC was down pretty low. Actually, Satrup a little later on resigned. So that by the time they finished, there was 15 GBC members. It was down to 15. Notes on all members were accompanied by a voting count and specifically written list of points of rectification. So the idea is that the GBC, first of all, was now going to subject to some kind of peer review, peer being Prabhupada disciples. And then the committee was to propose 10 additional candidates for GBC position in whom the committee feels best exemplify the qualities of GBC members as Prabhupada's instructions, and the committee has confidence. And then propose checks and balances. So that was the idea of this. They gave some guidelines for evaluating GBC members and so on like that. So that was this 50-person committee that sat, and each GBC man. Now some people on the GBC were very upset about this that it happened. And some were going along with it, and I thought I should now tell what happened with Hari Kesh, because Archana had asked me and I told her, and then she wondered why were we informed, you know. So I think I do a little explanation. What we had discovered about Hari Kesh Swami, of course, he was controversial also with the reform movement, but we didn't really know that much about what was going on. There was just more or less rumors, and he wasn't up front the way Bhagavan had been up front in opposition. But Guru Gauranga Prabhu in from Zurich had been kicked out by Hari Kesh Swami. So he came and he told us in the 50-man committee that Hari Kesh had an arrangement by which all the properties in ISKCON and the BBT in his own were basically in his name. What they were is they were in the hand of a fiduciary agent named Frau Waller in Liechtenstein. But he controlled the fiduciary agent. So Gugurunga told us the whole thing. The committee of 50 met. We divided into little groups. Each group was assigned, so many GBC men to review and prepare areas of doubts and questions and stuff like that. And then we were going to bring them in one by one and talk to them. And very quickly, I was made the official interrogator. Because I guess they discovered I had a way of asking pretty heavy questions, but in a nice way. So that's But I was said they just handed me the notes. You know, the committee handed me the notes, and I went over them. And so with Hari Kesh, the thing that we were decided, the other thing that happened is Sariputta had been sent by Bhagavan as a spy. You remember this. And he came to where they were doing research on UFOs to build free energy machines. And so Sariputta had come back with a whole story about that thing, you know. And Sariputta was on the 50-50-man committee. And Sariputta thought that it was not impressed by this effort at free energy. But when we sat, this committee sat around together, I was on the committee for her, that we're just going to focus on one thing, and that was the properties. You know, the other stuff was just too much to get into. And I don't remember, but anyway, we were going to have to be one-pointed and focus on these properties. So he came and sat down, and he was, you know, you could tell by his body language, he was very, very, very upset at being called into question about anything. And so I asked him about the properties, that there's some arrangement by we understand the properties are in your name. He said, no, they're not. I said, well, I know they're not. They're in the name of a fiduciary agent named Frau Waller in Liechtenstein. Then he looked over and he saw Garugaranga and he knew what happened, you know. That Garugaranga had spilled the beans. And I said, yes, I know about the, we, you know, I said, would you explain to us how this fiduciary agent worked? And he said that this is too difficult to be understood by ordinary people. And then I said, well, just try. And then finally, he's made a few sentences that nobody could understand. And then Garugaranga said, actually, it's very simple, and then he laid it all out. And then I said to Hari Kesh, after Garugaranga had given the short, clear, lucid, and easily understandable explanation, I said, did anything he say was wrong? Hari Kesh couldn't say anything was wrong. So then we understood that all the properties were in his name, because he had gotten very suspicious of what was happening of this, and I think he had this idea that Prabhupada, in his wisdom, in case ISKCON should sink, had this kind of lifeboat, which was the BBT, of which he was the trustee, and here the true ISKCON would survive. And he had arrangements made so that should ISKCON go in a way he didn't like, he could just pull out, take all the properties, all of his disciples, and the BBT, and keep on going while the rest of us went off to hell. That seemed to be clearly what he had thought. Anyway, so after we finished asking about the properties, I said, thank you very much. And he says, aren't you going to ask me about flying saucers? I didn't bring it up. We agreed we weren't going to bring it up. So I said, okay, tell us about flying saucers. And then he started, his voice got very shrill and very strident, and he said, you fools. You don't know that Prabhupada said that we have to find a way to get energy out of the ether. And then he started going on, and he was going this tirade about Sariputta, and he went on and on and on in this most alarming fashion. And in the course of this tirade, he also very thinly veiled told us that if we did something he didn't like, he was going to leave ISKCON with all his disciples and all the properties and the BBT. Then he went out of the room. When he ran out of the room, people started to exclaim. And the first thing I heard was, he's crazy. And then somebody else said, we can't vote no confidence in him. If we do, he'll leave the movement. That's what they said. But there was a previous person, and at that time we had this one vote, up or down, yes or no, no confidence or confidence. And we had just, a previous Zomacharya, the committee had just voted no confidence. And I said to them, wait a minute, you know, we just voted no confidence in somebody. Now you can't turn around and vote confidence in somebody because you think he's worse. That didn't seem quite right. And so that's when the committee changed its procedures. Instead of one up or down vote, it would be a kind of report card. We have confidence in this person because of these things and no confidence because of those things. And And at that point, the only thing that happened with Harikesh is we decided, you know, there's a big problem here. It's more than we could handle. Because I had to explain to people that one of our overriding concerns was not to see ISKCON split up. This was our big value, that we did not want to destroy the movement. And there was always a danger at this thing, and we wanted to rectify things as much as we could without, like Vietnam, we had to destroy the village in order to save it, that we would do something like that. And it was clear that this would happen in this case. So there were big issues with Harikesh. His behavior was not rational at all. And we thought that we would deal with this in future years. We'll take it as much as we can. But right now, what happened the next year was that within the next year, all the properties were taken, you know, that were put back into ISKCON's name. Guru Granga was sent to Europe to see that happened, that they weren't under his increasing. Other than that, there was no sanctions. Now, I have to say, in his case, the fact is that I don't think he came to the GBC meetings for the next 2 years. By then, there was 15 or 20 or 15 new people on the GBC. That was the next thing that happened. The committee of 50 recommended its people after doing these report cards, and everybody sitting with each people, going over the report cards with them, having, you know, prescribed suggestions for rectification. That's what they did as far as the GBC went. And then the existing GBC, and then new people were voted in as GBC members. That's when I got elected onto the GBC, not knowing that if you lead a successful revolution, you then have to get put on the government, and then things become hard. Up until then, then your life really is much more difficult. As far as Harikesh goes, we didn't see him for 2 years. He was ill, prostrate, completely gone, couldn't come. I think it was 2 years. And then when he came back, he was really different. He was really, really different. And he complained that only half of his brain was working. And I thought, well, thank God, you know, because at least I could deal with him. And I found I could work together with some things. And he seemed like quite a different person. What we now know, and didn't know at that time, that after that GBC meeting, he had a complete breakdown. And that's when Chinteshwar began feeding him this vibhuti powder, which had the psychotropic drug. And America's brand name is Stelazine, which used to be given to kids to get them off of bad LSD trips. And he had been taking it all those years, and he didn't stop taking it until the beginning of last year. That's what happened. There were other people who would have, as far as we could see, this reform was a delicate thing because we did want to keep ISKCON running. We did want to keep things going. There were clear members of the GBC who in their heart did not agree with this reform movement, didn't really think the Dzogchen Lhasas were really all that bad or the system. But somehow we ended up working together with them on the GBC body. It seemed to me like ISKCON was the kind of organization that to fix it was like trying to repair an airplane while you're keeping it flying. You know, it was... it was a little difficult to do, and so basically that's when this thing came to fruition. Well, there are many who came on the GBC: myself, Ganapati Maharaj, Agrani Swami, Niranjana Swami, Hari Vilas Prabhu, Kavi Chandra Maharaj, Yasomati Nandana Prabhu, Guru Prasad Maharaj, Bhakti Bhushana Maharaj, Dhanavir Prabhu that time, Shivaram Maharaj, Bhakti Chhu Maharaj, Govinda Maharaj, Pikuldara Prabhu, Puti Prabhu. Those were the people at that time who were. So there was a whole bunch of people on the GBC. I think I'm going to have to end this narrative right now, and I just want to now bring up some principles. Or having heard all this, what does it all mean? Where do we go wrong? And what are we supposed to do? As you notice, this so-called reform, I could tell at the time it wasn't complete. And in one part of it, it was nothing you could accomplish by any kind of legislation. There was a spiritual consideration that was not being covered just by passing resolutions on the GBC. What went wrong, I think we find out in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Majjalila chapter 19, Majjalila 19, text 159, where different kinds of upashaka, unwanted or weeds, unwanted creepers, in other words, weeds, spring up. And when there's some unnecessary creepers growing with the bhakti creeper are the creeper of behavior unacceptable for those trying to attain perfection, diplomatic behavior, animal killing, mundane profiteering, mundane adoration, and mundane importance. I think you saw some of these things that began to happen. Kutinati, when Prabhupada says diplomacy means being duplicitous, two-faced, and labha, puja, profiteering, puja, material adoration, pratishta, becoming important in mundane eyes. The thing that Prabhupada says in this purport that's very interesting about these creepers, these weeds, these anartas, one should be very careful to avoid all these unwanted things. Now listen to this. Sometimes these unwanted creepers look exactly like the bhakti creeper. They appear to be of the same size and same species when they are packed together with the bhakti creeper. But in spite of this, the creepers are called upashaka, undesirable. A pure devotee can distinguish between the bhakti creeper and a mundane creeper, and he's very alert to distinguish them and keep them separate. So there is a counterfeit, an ersatz bhakti creeper. Looks just like it, grows big and tall, and you think this is the real thing, but it turns out to be puja, pratishta, labha, all these things. He goes on to say, and I think the next purport, what to do, how these creepers come about. Bhakti Siddhanta states that if one hears and chants without trying to give up offenses, one becomes material attached to sense gratification. This is why these creepers come up. In other words, the creepers spring up if one is chanting the Hare Krishna mantra and not working very hard to give up offenses. That if offenses are being committed and one is not clearing them up, if you think Vaishnava Aparad is a wonderful management technique, or that the more you slander devotees, the more advancement you make, or you come established in some kind of outlook like that, you'll be on this platform. So how to rectify matters in this case, we also have the same unwanted creepers are mentioned earlier in the purport to Majja 12, text 135, where how Lord Chaitanya cleansing the temple is mentioned. It says that Prabhupada mentions that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, again he's saying Bhakti Siddhanta says this, as the world leader was personally giving instructions on how one should receive Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, within one's cleansed and purified heart. If one wants to see Krishna seated in his heart, he must first cleanse the heart. Just like Jagannath is going to come to the Gundicha. If a devotee at all wants to cleanse his heart, he must chant and hear the glories of the Lord, Sri Krishna, Srinivata, Swakata, Krishna. This is a simple process. Krishna himself will help cleanse the heart. This is the point. Krishna himself will help cleanse the heart because he is already seated there. Krishna wants to continue living within the heart. And the Lord wants to give directions. But one has to keep his heart clean as Lord Chaitanya kept the Gundicha temple. The devotee therefore has to cleanse his heart just as the Lord cleansed the Gundicha temple. The heart must be cleansed without ulterior motive, anya bilasita shunyam. He says, we cannot, I'm skipping here, of course, through this purport. We cannot perceive the Lord's presence in our heart unless our hearts are cleansed. Not only not perceive the Lord, but receive His directions. Then Prabhupada ends this purport. He begins talking about those particular unwanted creepers. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains that even though one may become free from the desire for fruitive activities, sometimes the subtle desire for a fruitive activity again comes into being within the heart. One often thinks of conducting business to improve devotional activity, but the contamination is so strong that it may later develop into misunderstanding, described as kutinati, fault-finding, and pratishta, the desire named for fame and for high position, jiva himsa, other envy of other living entities, nishidachar, accepting things forbidden in the shastra, kama, desire for material gain, and puja, hankering for popularity. Like I said, gradually one desires to become a reputed devotee or an avatar, he says. So notice that Prabhupada talks about receiving direction. The other thing that comes into our mind, and then Prabhupada again says what is needed, this whole process of cleansing is called anartha nirvritti. So the other thing that comes into mind is we're dealing with leaders here, and we're worried about the leadership of our movement and how our movement can actually be conducted by Krishna properly via such leaders. How are these leaders going to transmit or somehow act under the direction of Krishna? Prabhupada also tells us that. And it's the same point. In the preface to Nectar of Instruction, in essence, Prabhupada's commenting on the first verse of Nectar of Instruction. Vacho vegam, manasakrota vegam. If you get rid of these six urges, then you're qualified to make disciples all over the world. Prabhupada says, everyone within the material world is engrossed in the modes of passion and ignorance. One must promote himself to the platform of goodness, or sattva-gun, by following the instructions of Rupa Goswami, and then everything concerning how to make further progress will be revealed. That's what he says. The other purport I want to mention is Bhagavatam 4.18.5. It's because when I was being asked in New Vrindavan at that time to become a spiritual master, of course I had to do some soul searching about that. And I didn't think I wanted to be like the big acharyas, but when I considered that a spiritual master is essentially a teacher, I thought I could do that. That was something I knew what it was to teach, and I thought I could teach Krishna consciousness. But then there's the other issue of how advanced you have to be. Huh? And I just happened to open Bhagavatam to this verse, which says, the earth is speaking, a foolish person who manufactures his own ways and means through mental speculation and does not recognize the authority of the sages who lay down unimpeachable directions is simply unsuccessful again and again in his attempt. Prabhupada then says, that one has to be, you cannot be led by a conditioned soul because a conditioned soul makes mistakes. Consequently, we have to take direction from liberated persons, he says. This Krishna consciousness movement directly receives instructions from the Supreme Personality of Godhead via persons who are strictly following his instructions. There are two surprises in this sentence. One, he says directly, and then he says via. And I'm sure he knows what he's doing. The previous sentence says one has to take directions from liberated persons. And in the parallel sentence, he says, we receive instructions from the Supreme Personality of Godhead via persons who are, and we expect the word, liberated. He doesn't say that. He says, who are strictly following his instructions. Prabhupada notices he's aware of what he's saying, because in the next sentence, although a follower may not be a liberated person, if he strictly follows the supreme liberated personality of Godhead, his actions are naturally liberated from the contamination of material nature. Lord Caitanya therefore says, by my order, you may become a spiritual master. One can immediately become a spiritual master by having full faith in the transcendental words of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and by following his instructions. So that was the verse that made up my mind. And you can see when Prabhupada actually applied the teachings of who is qualified to be an initiating guru in ISKCON, this was the criteria which he always adverted to strictly following. He even said about himself, I don't claim to be liberated, I only claim to be strictly following my liberated spiritual master. So if people are strictly following, and I think strictly following especially means strictly performing sadhana in the sense that one is chanting at least on the clearing platform, we will not run into these problems. I guarantee it. People are saying that the spiritual master has to be a board certified resident of Vrindavan or known to be Mahabhagavata and all kinds of other things. But our problem in ISKCON wasn't that we had spiritual masters who weren't Mahabhagavatas. We had spiritual masters who they would have gotten thrown out of a bhakti program. They were just not following the most basic principles of Krishna consciousness. That was the problem. If you look at it, huh? So I think if you go back to basics, we do not have to be in any anxiety. And I think the basics, they're simple to understand and even simple to do if one wants to. But you have to be careful that always that we are chanting our rounds while trying to give up offenses. To maintain any offenses is what causes the problems. Okay, so now the few minutes for questions or anything else. Try to end on an upbeat note. Because it's a very depressing sort of recitation. Yes.
Yesterday, I'm trying to get his name right here, Kadamba Kanana, made an attempt to describe your presentation here and many of the other ones going on as dealing with matters on what he called level one of ISKCON, that is ISKCON as a student substitution. I got the impression that he meant that whatever the state of affairs on that level, ISKCON on level two and level three, that is ISKCON as quote, perfect spiritual process and the flow of divine love from Lord Chaitanya was never affected. The levels 2 and 3 were strictly separated from one and could never be affected. With all respect, I have to admit that I have a certain problem with it. I think they cannot understand how that is to reconcile with a traditional view, which clearly states in the tradition that the spiritual effect of visiting a temple or a place of pilgrimage depends on the standard, the spiritual standard of the person maintaining that place of temple. Instead, I would like to praise the obvious courage, integrity, and moral rectitude and strength, which is so evident in Ravindra Swarup's presentation. And these qualities, are the criteria of true Brahminical culture. And what we have witnessed here is an exercise from people in terms of the first class.
Well, anyway, we're supposed to tell the truth even to our enemies.
I really think that, and I'm speaking here on behalf of quite a number of knowledgeable people who if this kind of, if these things were not going on within ISKCON, would be prone to dismiss ISKCON as corrupt in its entirety, and to even consider Prabhupada's mission in the West failure. And in my humble view, they would be right. Because today I think this Ravindra Swarup's efforts of this kind, and also Funagiri's initiatives, which more than anything else proves the authenticity and the quality of this movement.
Thank you.
I don't know exactly what Kadambakarna Maharaj was referring to. I know it's a fact that it was possible during these worst days to be within ISKCON and still make spiritual advancement. So in that sense, you could detach yourself and not be affected by the environment, although sometimes it was very difficult and sometimes people did get quite overwhelmed. But I can't see how, if part of our mission, our essential mission for not only for, even for our own spiritual advancement is spreading Krishna consciousness, how you can execute it with these things going on. It obviously cripples our ability to follow Lord Chaitanya's order. I mean, in that sense, everything is connected with everything else. You may privately be very advanced, but our business is not to privately be very advanced. Our business is to bring other people back to Godhead. So in that sense, we can't execute his order unless the institution is in good shape. Is someone else? Yes, ma'am.
So one concern I have from hearing what you're saying is that for the general devotees, they don't have access to the kind of information about what's been happening, what's been going on. Devotees are not allowed that. And you're not so able to tell whether the senior devotees are actually following the process. So how do you tell that your faith in the senior devotees is actually based on
reality,
It's not something
for obvious
reasons, but we
actually have access. To some extent you're going to have some confidence in the leadership. Before, we had no confidence that if somebody was deviating or going off, that that person would be protected by the institution. We've been trying to change that, and so if the senior people are found to be deviating, we're rather quick to tell people about it and make the matter public. This is happening, I guess, in an uneven way. Some countries more than others, but that at least effort I can assure you. The other thing is, you have to use your own intelligence. You know, at one point there was an incident I didn't get to talk about where a leader in New York temple really went off the deep end and was quite flagrantly breaking principles. And for some time had the backing of senior members of the New York temple. And anyway, the whole thing finally came out. And Prabhupada praised the devotees for, even though there were so many problems in that temple, and the devotees were being cruelly treated by the management, praising the devotees for at least going on with their normal duties in spite of everything and helping to keep their Krishna movement going on. But he also said that devotees should have had the intelligence to know when somebody was deviating. And he said in the letter that you should not surrender your intelligence. Intelligence means here your good judgment and your discrimination. So Prabhupada has given the books and all kinds of instructions about what we are supposed to be able to say, you know, what is Krishna consciousness and what is Maya. We're not supposed to give that up. It's by our intelligence that we surrender, but we don't surrender our intelligence. So aside from hoping you can have leadership that you can trust in general, to do the right thing, is each devotee himself or herself has to become intelligent to be able to apply the standards of Krishna consciousness and know when something is wrong, when it is right in front of their face anyway.
Just a short question. I was looking for it. It doesn't seem to be possible to find it in Victoria. Were you in the base again? Is it New York? Which year is that?
I can't remember exactly what year it was. 73 or 74. There was a whole incident involving Bali Mardan. I remember seeing the letter. It may not have been preserved in folio. It's not, huh?
Okay.
Do you feel that the form is as relevant today as it was in the 80s when we were reading this movement? Somewhat less important?
I think it's always important because I don't think, as far as the structural matters go, in some ways now I'm a member of the GBC, so my perspective is probably warped. But at least as far as what I consider to be the real process, the genuine process of reform, which is the spiritual process, that is still urgently needed. I think ISKCON as a whole has got some ways to go to recover from, still from this 87 thing. We still haven't gotten over it. And ISKCON has to become a Brahminical institution. Right now, the whole effort is to put Prabhupada in the center, but I'm a little concerned that people don't know really how to do that. Because Prabhupada is now manifest to us, not in his Vapu form, but in his Vani form. That is to say, in the form of his books. And to put Prabhupada in the center means to put Prabhupada's books in the center. Prabhupada's books in the center is to have people become much more serious students of Prabhupada's works and writings. That still hasn't happened yet. The Prabhupada's original complaint that I think right from the beginning that you think my books are just for distributing or not for reading is still too much true. Yes?
Yeah, in my own Krishna conscious life, I have experience of authorities who think when you do service, yeah, the safety wasn't so important. So you do the service despite whatever, you know, and certain things like scaffolding, they were not in good shape, so when you fall down, things like that. So really, if you went to the GBC or the person who's in charge of the particular, I can't say anything about it.
Yeah, sure. There are many, many stories like that where we see that also at this time there was a great deal of people not taking care of the people whose job it was to take care of. When you're in a position of authority or power, you're supposed to take care of people. And when you don't take care of their safety, don't take care of their health, don't do so many things, then it's also abuse of power. And I could say the big problem, I guess you could put it in a few words, is abuse of power on the top of the leadership. And that's this, puja, pratishta, kutinata, it's all there. Like that. I think we're 5 minutes over time already, and there has to be another class coming in here, so I'll have to stop now. I can stand up here for 5 minutes while I pack up and talk to anybody else. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki. Cancel that, switch off. That some people couldn't face reality. Bhavananda at that time was co-GBC from Mayapur. I mean, you don't know what happens. The other thing that happened in this 1987 meeting, is after we finished the committee 50,000 in the GBC, we were meeting, and Nittai Chan, Swami, with all his men, held the GBC hostage. They were down there with sticks. Because they were all the disenfranchised Bhavananda men. Well, we pacified them. There were some charges against Nittai Chan. There had been a committee investigating. And you know, later on we had to deal with those things. But there was nothing to do. All of a sudden the GBC realized, this is Bengal, we could all die. You know, and it was like not like the police are going to come or anything like that. Or even if a bunch of Bengali people kill a bunch of Westerners, anybody's going to care that much. So we called Nittai Chan up, called up the investigation, pacified him, everything like that. So things are very heavy. Things are very heavy. So that may have also influenced whatever he did. But anyway, Bhavananda was a co-GBC for Mayapur, and huge amounts of money were being collected in Australia and then going to build the Mayapur project. A lot of money. So that may have been another reason people couldn't face the idea of all of a sudden going back broke overnight.
Well, I wanted to ask you, this question about the spiritual mind here, that was exclusively absolute, because you expect from the audience, as soon as they join it, they have like a 1 year or whatever,
yeah,
an experience to really judge and to observe and to see how to choose a person who's really qualified to have a spiritual mind, because you know, we probably know for all the devotees to really see. How to then, because I tell you, so many devotees are coming and asking that, and I myself, I don't know. How to really seek to be a person of the kind, especially for a year.
What do you want to know? How to do it?
Yeah,
study the books, find out what the standards are, and don't accept the spiritual master until you're sure. Don't surrender to anybody unless you have full faith. The GBC says you can have a year, maybe that's not enough. Well, then take it. It took Prabhupada 12 years before he had faith, but you know, you don't know what's. What's the big rush? You know? If you're not sure, if you have doubts, don't do it. That's all I can say. You know, we've got plenty of literature that says what it is, and it's difficult. And it's a shame you have to do when you're so young, but that's the way life is, you know? Why is it, you know, you got to make your big decisions like who I'm going to marry, what career I'm going to follow, when you're young and you don't know anything? What if you can make all those decisions when you're 50? Live your life backwards, but somehow or other it's so arranged that you got to make them when you're young. Who do I get married to? What's my career? Who's my spiritual master?
But one thing is also difficult, even if you may understand that it has to be up to spiritual master.
Yeah.
Again, so difficult to see if he is really.
Yeah, like, I understand that.
Because it's like, you know, he comes
once a year, yeah, well, you either have to spend enough time that you can see, or have enough people that you trust, whose observation you accept, what else can you do? The third part of the process is between you and Krishna. As you said, you pray to Krishna to please send me somebody. Sometimes, you know, if I remember one woman, young lady in our temple during the early 80s wanted to get initiated by Hamsa Buddha. He was still officially an initiating spiritual master, so I tried to tell her I wouldn't, don't do it, you know. And she got all angry at me. She said, "Oh, you're blaspheming my guru," you know. She got really upset. She says, and I said, "Why do you want to get initiated by him? He's so cool, rich, a chew gum, and wear blue jeans." So if that's what she wants a spiritual master for, I thought, you know, that's what she deserves.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's like that, you know. So you should pray to Krishna that he sends somebody who can not fulfill your material desires or let you maintain them, but actually help you go back to Godhead. So I always say that's another factor. Because it says that Krishna sends, by the grace of Krishna, we get a spiritual master. So do everything you can to get that grace also. Right? That's the third factor. Your own observation, testimony of others, and the grace of Krishna.
Because when somebody comes something problematic happens, like the Pali Krishna, right? That was 1887.
Yeah.
So that was a big thing, and you cannot also say, okay, then out you go. Because there's always rectification.
Yeah, that was the thing. That was the thing.
So it's not that. But the authorities didn't tell us.
Yeah.
Things can change, and they can.
Archana said to me, why didn't you tell us about this? I said, because if I told you in 87 what people, some of his godbrothers, thought of Hare Krishna, he immediately decided we were demons. Immediately. She said, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true. That's one reason you couldn't have done things. Second of all, as far as we knew, he wasn't falling down or breaking the principles and things like that. And I would have dealt with him in the future, except I didn't see him for 2 years, and then when he came back, he was changed. I thought that, you know, something has happened, and I didn't know it was psychotropic drugs.
Nobody.
Nobody did. Apparently not even him. You know? Apparently not even, didn't know it was a miracle of modern medicine. So Peshwar alone knew, huh? Yeah, well, I don't believe him. Not only that, I talked to several Indian physicians. I know this is a very common practice in India, by what they call indigenous practitioners. People who practice traditional forms of medicine. You know, somebody comes in with a fever, they give them some Ayurvedic thing, and it's got aspirin, you know, mixed up. Very common practice. It's almost a standard way. They use all, and of course they have no idea what they're doing when they use these drugs. It's really sort of dangerous thing.
There's so many
cases because of gospel, and there's a case that's now normal case, but what do you do? Yeah, that's what he does. Yeah, that's what he does. Some people think that the GBC is making some ideas that those who are moved toward the fact that those who are initiating gurus and those who are managers are two different people. Some people think that will help us solve some problems. I'm not quite sure. But you can see that was a proposal right at the beginning of 86 and 87. That those who are managers and those who are gurus be two different groups of people. Yeah, the GBC would not be gurus. Yeah. It's fine with me. Anyway, it may be too much concentration power in one person's hands. Well, I know it's a fact that sometimes how you would treat somebody as a disciple and how you would treat somebody as a GBC are not the same. You've got both positions. Sometimes it makes some difficulties.
It's a kind of schizophrenia.
I'm sorry?
I think it's a kind of schizophrenia because you need to be the person who's
I don't think that managers in ISKCON are kshatriyas. I think managing ISKCON is like a Sunday school, you know, or a library. Kshatriya means you have a right to use violence. That's kshatriya. I think having managers in ISKCON's you do have to have some little tinge of management, leadership and things like that, but to be a real kshatriya, believe me.
No, but it doesn't come to violence, but sometimes to abuse.
Yeah, I can. It shouldn't. There should be a style of brahminical management. It's a little different than what a kshatriya would use. Kshatriya means, the state means, they always have at least the threat. They can come and arrest you. They can put you in jail. They can take away your property. They can take away your life. So far, we've found it hard to get along without some people to do that. Right? It's unfortunate, but that's the way it is. Huh? Yeah, that's another interesting one. At first, you know, the GBC was only going to be householders. That was Prabhupada's original idea. But then Tamal Krishna had taken sannyas and got off the GBC, but then Prabhupada needed him so badly he had him come back on. So then after that, the GBC was sannyasis, and Prabhupada seemed to go along with it, and he approved of it. The GBC was mostly sannyasis anyway. But that did lead to problems because, you know, the GBC was managing a movement that had householders and children and sometimes didn't really want to take responsibility because that's not the business of sannyasis. Well, it is if they're on the GBC. You know, and if you can't be a sannyasi in the GBC, you should get off. Because you definitely have to take care of these people. You don't want to think about women and children. You have the wrong job, you know. So that's been discussed, that particular point. I think the other class has got to come here and meet now. He was trying to kill Kirtanar and he was trying to kill Rameshwar. Well, he really did want to kill some Buddhists. Huh? That was somebody else that did it. Another crazy person that did it. And really had nothing to do with somebody who I heard, he was somebody who knew about it. He wanted Kirtanar to give him sannyas. His name was Tri Yogi. And Kirtananda wouldn't do it. That was the story I heard. And then, of course, after he hit Kirtananda, Kirtananda went to hospital, and Sulochan sent him a letter of congratulations and stuff like that. But Sulochan didn't have anything to do with that. Okay. You're welcome.